Yorkshire salmon for the pups and fed it to them in the gold pan. And this little fox got to be so much more active. They're about the same age. But the fox is so much more active than the fox that he'd stand in the door with me, and he knew I protected him. But I'd little leery about the mother, and so was he. But he'd watch them pups, and they'd all be around that gold pan eating. And he'd light out there, and he'd jump them all among them. He'd just kick them in all directions, then whining back in the cab. Well, I had more fun with that fox. He'd get up on the table, he'd get every place. Well, I got to slapping him for getting up on the table. And then he'd get up my lap, and he'd reach over with his paw so he could see what there was on the table. And as he growed, he got more interesting. And I'd go out in this, and as he growed, he got more interesting. And I'd go out in this, on the trail, and I'd send him back. I'd make him go back. I didn't want to follow him after he got bigger. And I didn't want him to follow me. I was just afraid something happened to the little fella. But he got so he'd sneak through the brush. Maybe he'd come to me 4 or 5 miles out in the brush, and he'd come to me just like a dog would that you'd whipped him. He knew he'd done wrong, you know. But he knew if he come to me way out in the brush, I wouldn't send him back, and he'd follow me all day. He just made a marvelous pet. That's all there was to it. And you know, that fall, we got in our boat and took off down the river and left Bear. And Bear's got so big that one of them holed up under the cabin that winter. And he just raised Cain all winter, snoring and grunting and groaning. The other one holed up out under a tree. We didn't notice him, but you'd rather hear him groaning too. But we trapped there all that winter and had to tie our fox up a lot because he was afraid he'd get in a trap. But anyhow, in the spring, I got in my boat and we sailed off down river. The fox chased us for quite a bit. Bear didn't pay any attention to us. But the bear got so big that it was kind of dangerous. They had, didn't mean to be, but they were just so strong and rough that we was afraid they'd break an arm or something. But anyhow, we was through with that trapping country anyhow, and we got in our boat and went off and left. And the fox chased us for several miles down there, but he quit. But you know, it is a funny thing. That fall, I was coming through that country with my dogs on the ice early in the spring, fall, and a little snow come just as I was coming to this cabin. I was driving to stay there all night. And I stayed all night, and next morning I got up, and there was a fox track all around that cabin. He is up on the edge of the roof. He'd just been every place. I knew it was my fox, but of course I didn't get to see him. But an awful interesting. It was a war on that Shoshan stampede. Of course, we worked all summer to find out what it was. There was 6 fellas that belonged in Slate Creek, and we all gathered at the river. Before we got there, it was about 60 miles on the Slate Creek in the Salina River, and we was only about 10 miles below the glacier. Well, we got in there 2 or 3 at a time, and all of us had a little something to eat, but none of us had much. Some didn't have any, really. But we had to wait because it was the river was just a boiling. We'd been madness to go in because you'd have probably lost somebody. So we decided to wait till morning. You can, up close to those glaciers, along, any time after noon, they are pretty well out. And by night, they're just a boiling. But about 5 o'clock in the morning, when you're close to a glacier that way, the nights come on, they quit thawing so bad, and the river will drop sometimes 3 or 4 or 5 feet. Drop a lot and make it pretty safe. So we decided all to wait, and they caught up one at a time and 2 at a time and come in. And all of us talking about grub, of course. And we decided we'd put all of our grub together and cook something. Some had baking powder, some had a little raisin, some had a little rice, and some had a little flour, and none of them had enough for a good feed, and all of us put together, we had it. Gives a fairly good feed, and we can make the other 60 miles without any trouble. So we dumped it out in cans that we had to cook in, and flour in one, baking powder, and rice, and everything in different cans. sitting around there, and a couple of fellas got to arguing about Germany. And they got in a fight. And they got in a fight right over our grub. They just scattered it all over the country. I'm telling you, it was a mess when they got through. We just didn't have anything to eat for anybody. But that's just what people do when they're irritated, you know, all in, tired. You know how it is. A year or two prior to this, I'd built a fish wheel on the upper copper. First one I'd ever built at Chester Gina. They'd never seen one before. They had all stood on a little platform and dipped their fish out of the basket about 18 inches long. And fish had begun to get kind of scarce. The cannery had been catching a lot of them. And they wasn't doing so well. So I wanted fish for my dogs that winter, and I was going to trap again in the rain. And so I put in a fish wheel. Well, they was pretty skeptical about that fish wheel. And they'd watch, and didn't help them much, but they'd all watch and chatter and comment about it, and they couldn't figure out anything but a man is going to catch fish. Well, I had the best luck. When I let that thing down, the first dip it turned over, it caught two salmon. Well, from that on, it just fished to who tied him, you know. Well, up there, the man does the fishing, and the women cut the fish and dry them. So I had a cinch. The women would get the fish out of the fish wheel and cut them up and dry them. All I had to do was just keep my fish wheel going. And I supplied the whole camp with fish, and when I got through that year, I just had plenty of fish, too. And so did the old chief there. Nikolai was his name. And he decided that dog teams wasn't just altogether fitting for his status in life, and he better get a horse. So long toward fall, he bought himself a horse. Well, I never thought about the old fella, but, you know, he had that horse tied to a manger and had the manger full of fish. He had lots of fish. Well, somehow the horse didn't eat fish very good, and consequently the horse died that winter. He couldn't figure that one out, but we had a quite a time over that fish. Well, now you know, they tell about a man going wild. Well, here's a thing that happened to me. I knew a fella running the post there very well, but he hadn't seen a white man now for 3 or 4, maybe 5 months. And I come through there with 2 horses packed, and just above the cabin was an old barn and his trading post, and you could, good grass there. The sun was warm, and he wasn't home. So I went on past the cabin and went up to the old barn, unsaddled my horses and turned them loose, and one of them had a little bell on. And it is about 100 yards from there over to the river, and a trail run down the river. And I was leaning up against the barn, about half asleep, and I see this fellow's legs as he's walking, looking under the brush, coming down, and he heard this bell, and he stopped, and he kind of squatted down and looked. I was sitting right still, and he looked for just about 2 seconds, and he started to run. And he just run like the devil. I could see his legs going pegging down the river. Well, you know, that man was just really wild. That is all there was to it. Now, I went down to his cabin. About 1/2 hour later, he's plumb all right. Never said a word about running. But it might surprise you, in civilized life, how easy a man can go wild. Now, I've been wild. I've been in a cabin and I see a man coming, and I've just felt like running. I knew I was wild. That's just a man knows that lives like that. He'll just get wild, and that's all there is to it. Most of us has the presence of mind to control it, but that fella didn't. He just had to run. That's all there was to it. You know, sometimes everything we do in life ain't exactly fair, but there was a man by the name of McCrary at Copper Center in my first trip into the Wrangell Mountains. I was going in after some sheep. He said, son, he said, pretty tough in there. He said, I've been in there. Pretty tough to get them sheep. He said, I don't think you'll make it. But he said, go ahead. Well, it was freezing before I got back out. I killed a nice big ram and laid him out on the, took his antlers off, laid him out like like you do to let him drain and belly down. And when I went back, I went down the glacier from camp. When I went back next morning, he's froze, just as stiff as you please, you know. And he is froze in a perfect position. His hind legs stretched straight out behind him, one foot sticking up and the other one a little bit bent. So I just cut some holes in the ice and put a rope on him and got him up on his hind legs, and my partner took my picture standing there with that. It looked like that I'd roped the sheep and he took a run and was just reared up and just about to fall over backwards. Well, I never said a word about that picture. I just took it over and I left it on a desk at McCrary's. And he must have found it, because several times after that, why, I've had fellas say to me, "Slim, I heard you roped a big ram over in the Wrangler one time. Tell us about it." Well, I never told him about it, but that old fella, he always thinks that I roped that ram, I believe. Now the Indians about that Wrangell country. You know that, I think I told you about the three men going up there and seeing the ghost and dying. Well, there's something strange. Now, they used to tell about a big snake in there, along with a bush engine and the little man. There was a terrific big snake. To hear him describe him, why, he looked like a boa constrictor or something. It just makes you wonder if they, those tales hasn't come down since Alaska was tropical. If they wasn't there when Alaska was tropical, and those things just come down from generation to generation. But they describe a snake like there's no snakes in Alaska, and they've never seen one, I know that. So how the devil could they describe a snake? They even described him about getting up in a tree and catching a man, and then choking him to death. They had the idea exactly who the boa constrictor can't figure it out. Another thing about him is the big flat country. Now, they're always talking about the big flat country. That's the home of the little man. He hangs around Wrangell a lot, but when he goes home, he goes to the big flat country. Now, the only big flat country I know of, Dick, is where you is, over in Canada. And that's about 2,000 miles across two mighty tough ranges. I imagine that 2 or 3 months, maybe more, to get there would be awful good going. Yet they talk about that big flat country over there all the time. You know, it's most decidedly mountainous where I was. But they still seem to have some idea or know something about that big flat country. It's the same thing about the Eskimo. You know, he's never seen a mastodon. Yet he carves perfect mastodon on ivory. There's just some things to think about that always has interested me. And I just wonder why, how much is really dream or how much is what they remember or have been told from generations back. You know how they'll help a man if he's sick up there. Well, I come into Gulcana one spring. The road was open from Gulcana down to the coast, but from Gulcana north, it wasn't. It had thawed